You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
In the lower mainland of British Columbia, we're surrounded by water in the form of ocean, lakes, rivers, and streams. It's easy to take these aquatic ecosystems for granted, but if we examine these systems closely, we'll see that they fundamentally sustain life in our region. And if we apply an economic framework that asks the economic value of those systems, we might accord them more value and protection. The David Suzuki Foundation and Earth Economics has released a report that assesses the economic value of benefits the aquatic environment provides to residents of the lower mainland of BC. $30 billion. In their assessment, that's the minimum value of our water-based natural systems. Michelle Molnar is an environmental economist and is a co-author of the report, and she joins me now from Vancouver. Hello, Michelle.
Hello.
People who consider themselves environmentalists would like to see, we tend to see inherent value in nature and healthy ecosystems. Why did you want to actually put a price on functioning ecosystems?
Yeah, well, natural systems are intrinsically valuable, and they do have a value in and of themselves, and we certainly don't deny that at the David Suzuki Foundation or the folks at Earth Economics. But this study solely and exclusively looks at the economic value of nature or the benefits that nature provides to people, because at the end of our day, our economies need nature. And without understanding this value, critical nature could be lost at great cost to society, not just today, but into the future. So we believe it's really time to better design the economy to be more compatible with natural systems. You know, at the end of the day, we created the economy. It's a human construct, unlike nature. And if the goal of economics is to improve well-being, then we need to include nature into that equation.
Now, Michelle, you have a concept called natural capital, and that's key to your thinking in the report. What is natural capital?
So natural capital refers to the planet's stocks of water, land, air, renewable and non-renewable resources, such as plants and animal species, forests, minerals. Essentially, we're talking about the Earth's ecosystems. And the idea is that these ecosystems provide innumerable benefits to us. Among the visible products are things like food, fuel, and fresh water. But many of the benefits remain hidden from view. So among other things, ecosystems maintain a genetic library. They fix nitrogen and carbon. They cycle our nutrients, control floods, mitigate droughts, filter pollutants. The list goes on and on. It's extensive and it's growing. And these services are imperative for our survival and well-being. But they're also the basis for all economic activity. And unfortunately, they're not factored into our economy. So the term natural capital implies an extension of the economic notion of capital. So just as all forms of capital are capable of providing a flow of goods and services or benefits over time, components of natural capital interact to provide people with benefits that are wide-ranging and diverse. Now, unfortunately, nature is almost always absent from economic models and, by extension, the market. So accounting for nature, if it comes into the calculations at all, is usually an afterthought. So we're making decisions, unfortunately, without understanding or even attempting to understand the full trade-offs involved.
Now, I know that we've looked at some economic frameworks before that have used something called the triple bottom line, which looks at ethical considerations and environmental considerations. But you seem to go beyond this in the model that you're using.
Right. Well, we believe really that this is very fundamental. So because many of nature's benefits are invisible, it's easy to overlook them. Mm. However, with some ingenuity, it's possible to estimate the benefits we enjoy from them. So this study aims to illuminate the connections between healthy functioning ecosystems and the economy. And by identifying and placing a value in the non-market benefits that's sustained by these ecosystems, these connections are brought into the open so that governments and businesses can begin to develop the tools that they need to start incorporating nature into their decision-making in a very fundamental way.
Michelle, can you describe the area that your report looks at and the environmental and geographical features that it focuses on?
Yeah, so we've been focusing on this area for a little while. In the fall of 2010, the David Suzuki Foundation released a study of the terrestrial, or the land-based benefits of nature in the Lower Mainland. And this report is a companion report in that it estimates the value of aquatic-based benefits. But we decided to focus on this region originally because it's considered a provincial hotspot. And by that, I mean a region of high biodiversity and high risk. And it's at high risk really due to the rapid population growth and the widespread development in this region. Now, the continuing influx of people into the Lower Mainland, we're anticipating about 3 million people by 2020, ultimately is going to affect all aspects of sustainability across a range of scales. So the region's natural resources are going to be drawn down to create more and more jobs, more housing, built goods, transportation facilities, and recreational space. So the study area is, we looked at the benefits to the people in the Lower Mainland, and by that we define that as Metro Vancouver, the majority of the Fraser Valley Regional District, portions of the Squamish-Lillooet Regional District, as well as the traditional territory of more than 30 individual First Nations. But when we wanted, when we asked, what water-based ecosystems are providing those benefits to this region, we had to extend the study area. So, of course, ecosystems don't care about political boundaries, and while some benefits occur at very small scales, such as maybe flood protection, others occur at much larger scales, such as the fish that we eat from the region. So in the end, our study area included a region known today as the Salish Sea. That includes the bulk of the Georgia Strait, located between Vancouver Island and the mainland coast of BC. So it stretches from Canada's border with Washington State and actually dips down a little into the U.S. And together, this body of water just forms a huge estuary, which is a biologically rich and productive area where hundreds of rivers flow into the sea. So this is an area many of us have passed through on ferries to and from Vancouver Island. It's the area that we see when we drive the Sea to Sky Highway, and it's home to a staggering number of fish, marine mammals, invertebrates, shorebirds, and marine plants. And it's the interaction of these habitats and the species that call it home that produce the benefits that we studied.
Now, one of the benefits that you described the benefits of aquatic ecosystems as services. It's probably not the way that most of us are used to thinking of that. But what was the highest value service that you found?
Well, the highest value service is called disturbance regulation. So let me tell you what that is. So a range of habitats, including estuaries, bays, coastal wetlands, seagrass beds, provide protection from storms, storm surges, tsunamis, and other disturbances. And these ecosystems are able to absorb and store large amounts of rainwater or water runoff during a storm, in addition to providing a buffer against coastal waves. So estuaries, bays, and wetlands are particularly important for absorbing floodwater. And we estimated that they're worth up to about $300,000 per year. And part of the reason that this benefit was valued so high is because, you know, there's a number of studies that have come out recently on the value of nature in mitigating natural disasters. You know, events like Hurricane Katrina, where we know that the destruction of mangroves and wetlands contributed to the devastation of that storm. Because of events like this, more and more people are starting to study the value of natural habitat and mitigating these things.
Now, you've got a couple of case studies in the report. One's something which I've never heard about called blue carbon. What do you mean by that?
So new research by the UNEP, the IUCN, and the World Bank is revealing that the ocean's vegetated habitat, so those near-shore regions, rank among the most intensive carbon sinks on the planet. So similar to forests, near-shore aquatic environments and wetlands sequester carbon, but they do so much more efficiently, actually up to about 90 times the uptake for a comparable forested area. And the key is in their soils. So the soils of wetlands can remain undisturbed for thousands, if not millions, of years. And that whole time, the soil is building up this incredible stock of carbon. Now, we wanted to draw attention to this research, and we estimated the value of carbon storage and sequestration by aquatic habitats in the Lower Mainland. And we found it to be valued at approximately $40 million every year. So that's the price it costs the economy and physical and social capital to offset the damage done.
What's happening to BC wetlands? You've described it as providing this incredible value, $40 million a year just for sequestering of carbon alone. Are we adequately preserving these aquatic environments in the Lower Mainland?
No, unfortunately, we found wetlands to be the highest valued ecosystem on a per hectare basis. But despite the benefits that they provide to society here in the Lower Mainland, we continue to lose this essential ecosystem. So in 1827, just to give you an idea, it was estimated that the Fraser Lowlands of Metro Vancouver supported about 83,000 hectares of bogs, swamps, marshes, wetlands. And by 1990, this had declined to 12,000 hectares. And that represents an 86% loss in that region alone. So like other regions in Canada, we continue to lose wetlands directly through conversion to other land uses, such as urban and industrial development, transportation corridors, agriculture. And our study found that the economic value ranges between $38 million to $4.6 billion per year. But despite such high values for wetlands in BC, no provincial legislation exists to specifically protect its wetlands, especially habitat that does not support legally defined fisheries. You know, but these areas do support a range of common and at-risk species, many of which are not fish. So we really believe that urgent action is needed to protect the benefits that wetlands provide, you know, our regional and provincial economies, and just the health and well-being of our communities.
Now, Michelle, this has been a big undertaking to do this report, and you've got some very compelling numbers, and it's a great. It appears to be a great framework. What are your hopes for the report? What are the next steps for addressing the issues raised in your report?
Yeah, so really, this report, like you said, was a lot of work, but we see it as only a first step in the process of developing policies, measures, and indicators that support discussions about, you know, the real trade-offs involved in our decisions. We see that ongoing studies are critically needed to update valuations and improve our decisions. We note in the report that we were only able to value about 30% of the known services. So certainly there needs to be more research done. But we also need to see these numbers, these defensible numbers, start to work their way into our economic tools. So we need to start accounting for natural capital alongside GDP. We need to start considering these values in our cost-benefit analysis, you know, a tool that government uses to make many of their decisions, to be included in environmental impact assessments. And we need to start training government and businesses and nonprofit staff in the use of these evaluation tools.
Well, it's been great talking with you, Michelle. I really, really appreciate a very, very, very interesting report.
Thank you for having me on today.
I've been speaking with Michelle Molnar. She's the co-author of the report called The Nearshore Natural Capital Valuation Report on the Lower Mainland's Aquatic Ecosystems. And you can find the report at davidsuzuki.org.